Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in middle America, where, yep, we're seeing the onset of winter, which is always a favorite. I need to move where my guest is. And I'm really excited tonight to have Dr. Mark Gordon. I'm going to do a moment of housekeeping, and then I will tell you a little bit about him, and then I'm going to bring him on, and you will walk away with lots of takeaways. Dr. Gordon's been on the show before, and I meant to look it up. It's been many years, but as things naturally evolve, so has he and his work. And there's so many people hopeless and helpless because of our healthcare system. I know some people want to throw a tomato at me for that. but as I mentioned to him earlier, it's really tough in 15 minutes with your practitioner looking at an iPad to really project what's going on with you and to find answers that help. So a lot of us are like little rats in a maze running everywhere on our own without any coordination of care, trying to find answers for the things that ail us. Well, Dr. Gordon has answers. So one of the things you'll walk away tonight with is hope. But for those of you who are new around here, in general, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. I'm here every Wednesday night, though I know a lot of you have been sending me notes. That's why I stressed in the 30 places on social media, 30, 40 places that I promote the show, that the show is live tonight, as have the last few and the next few. I think I've moved past, that's not even a good way to put it. I'm back and ready to be live on my show. I guess I'll leave it at that. But a lot of you know that this has been one of the more trying years that I've had, one thing after another good reason why I was excited about having Dr. Gordon on tonight and hearing his pearls of wisdom, because this has been like a do-over of trauma and bizarre things happening both physically, spiritually, and psychologically. And I watched a documentary. I'm going to be talking to you and giving you, most of you know in my program notes, the websites I'm going to mention on the show or that we'll be talking about are always listed in the program notes, and you can find instructions on a documentary called Quiet Explosions. And I was watching it last night, as I mentioned to Dr. Gordon, because I wanted to remember. Had I watched this a week ago, it would have been a little more vague, but it's based on the book by Adam and Andrew Marr, and we'll be talking more about that, but I highly recommend, it will give you a trailer on this documentary, and I watched it on Amazon last night. Easy to find. I would recommend that everybody watch, because, and we'll talk about this too, there's a little bit of everyone on there. Andrew Mars, a Green Beret, his brother Adam, an Apache helicopter pilot, and they wrote a book. Also started a foundation, and I'm going to let Dr. Gordon talk a little more about that, but the Warrior Angels Foundation. In any case, Dr. Mark Gordon started over 35 years ago using combinations of natural ingredients to address memory, mental energy, and cognition, as well as physical performance without any banned or restricted products. He has been instrumental as a thought leader in developing the area of interventional endocrinology and now the area of neuroendocrinology as it pertains to symptomatic traumatic brain injury with depression, anxiety, bipolar, obsessive-compulsive disorders, dementia, Parkinson's, CTE, and post-concussion syndrome. While his work can benefit anyone, and this documentary demonstrates that, his main focus has been on veterans and active military members, which includes amazing work with Andrew Marr and his brother Adam. Dr. Gordon is the medical director of Millennium Health Centers. He has degrees in naturopathic medicine, nutrition, food technology, family medicine, endocrinology, internal medicine, alternative and complementary medicine, and pharmacy. Mark has been featured on ESPN Magazine, Military Times, Fox and Friends, several times on the Joe Rogan Experience, Good Morning America, The Epic Times, Montel Williams Show. Funny, and Montel was over here once. I'll have to see if he can get me Joe Rogan. And more. He's appeared so many places. He's gotten to be a rock star with humility. Can you imagine such a thing? But for more on Dr. Gordon, check out two websites, millenniumhealthstore.com and tbihelpnow.org, and you'll see all kinds of information about him, the programs that he does, request for him to be a speaker, request to be a patient and have a consult. So with that, I am going to bring on Dr. Mark Gordon. Happy to see you, hear you again. Welcome.
Same thing. It's been a while, but, you know, it's good that there was that hiatus because it gave me a chance to further hone my area of focus, which is neuroendocrinology, as you already said. For those people listening, neuroendocrinology is the area of science that deals with how the neurological system in the brain is influenced or interacts with the hormone systems that we have in our brain that control the hormones in our brain and the hormones below the neck in our body, the thyroid gland, the adrenal glands, the pancreas, and, you know, the gonads and so forth. And what I've found over the past 30 years, in fact, dealing with this area of trauma-related disruption of this neuroendocrine system, is that how important the hormones that are produced in our brain are throughout the entirety of our life, not just when we're young and sexually active or horny all the time, but it has to deal with the other benefits of hormones. We think about the hormones from a singularity that they're sex hormones, reproductive hormones, but it turns out that they're what we call pleiotropic, which means that they have lots of benefits on the body. And when you have trauma, whether or not it's military, football, a car accident, a slip and fall, or certain medication, prolonged surgery, or exposure to x-rays, repetitive x-rays, what happens is it destroys this ability of our brain to generate these hormones that help to keep things in balance. So what I've read and experienced in our not almost 9,000 patients is that when you disrupt these hormones, what you end up getting is inflammation in the brain, and this inflammation takes out control centers in the brain that allow us to function with great mental health. And when you take out certain systems, you lose important neurotransmitters and hormones like serotonin, melatonin, epinephrine, norepinephrine. And what happens is this leads us down to this pathway where we start developing the neuropsychiatric conditions that Kim already announced, you know, the depression, bipolar, obsessive compulsive, and all those other things. And there are other areas that, you know, we've looked at, which is, you know, labeled CTE, PTSD, TBI, but they're all inflammatory processes that occur due to trauma. And this trauma, which they call a primary injury or the primary injury, it begets, by nature of the primary injury, it begets a secondary injury, which is inflammation. And it's this inflammation that causes the damage to all the circuitry, causes the brain to shrink, causes us to develop Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, ALS, multiple sclerosis, and all those other neuropsychiatric conditions. So in understanding the relationship between trauma, now let me back up a second. What about those people who have no physical trauma, where they've never had a trauma, they haven't been exposed to IED or a hand grenade or a tank firing off a round or been hit by a car or fallen off their bicycle or fallen up airline stairs or had a subdural hematoma or a bleed in the brain? What about the people who just had stress? Well, it turns out that almost 10 years ago, we found that under chronic stress, bad relationships, stressful, you know, family relationships, marital relationships, job relationships, life, television, news, craziness in the world, that it induces a change in a control chemical in the brain. I'll just tell you, it's called fractalkin, And when fractalkine is affected by stress through a hormone called cortisol, the stress hormone that we've all heard about, what happens is the brain starts dumping inflammation throughout the entire brain. And in the acute phase, meaning in a very short period of time, if the stressor is fixed or you get onto a program that directly addresses the inflammation that gets into the brain, you can start repairing things. And if you don't do things early, what happens is you go into what we call a chronic phase, where during this chronic phase, you start developing more and more symptoms, deeper, stronger symptoms. And that's the reason why certain medications don't work, because you've exceeded the ability of these medications to work. Also, you need to have good chemistry in the brain for these chemicals, medications that are being put into your body to function in the brain. So if you've got a disruption or dysfunction of the chemistry in the brain, how do you expect the classical antidepressants to work or natural products to work, or now the big move towards psychiatric-assisted therapies, which work really nice? And if there's inflammation in the brain, these chemicals can't function. They don't work. So this part of this discussion is really letting you know that we have been able to define on an inflammatory basis and a hormonal basis why it is that people who have had trauma of whatever kind develop symptoms. So in knowing that we have recognized the causation, that means there's something that we possibly can do to fix it. And so what I've done over the past 16 years is focus in on alternative and natural means to fix the inflammation and also to help the body to turn back on its production of hormones. What hormones? Things like growth hormone, thyroid, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone. And there's enough literature out there to support this approach, where they found that inflammation, any kind of inflammation, could be a virus that creates the inflammation or a jab that creates the inflammation, will disrupt the brain's ability to regulate these hormones in the brain that regulate our body, that are part of the neuroendocrine system. So the past 16 years has been clinical practice utilizing mixtures of natural products like vitamin E, vitamin D, N-acetylcysteine, glutathione, fish oil, but certain formulations of it, as well as a unique delivery technology that we call liposomal. So you can get it into the system at a level that works. And in the movie that Kim was referring to, Quiet Explosions, which was written by my partner Andrew Moore and Adam Moore, and produced by a brilliant producer, director, writer, Jerry Shear, who put together this movie, and it has military, football, NFL players, it has Guinness World Record surfers, it's got gymnasts, it's got a person who was in the military, a female who was raped and on multitude of medications that didn't work. And the fact that in all these cases, they were put onto a multitude of medications. My partner, Andrew, was on 13 medications, full-blown alcoholic. And within a short time of getting into the program, less than 3 months, he's off his medication. He's no longer drinking. And he goes on with his brother Adam to write this book that gets picked up by Jerry Shear and made into a movie. Andrew ends up going through Pepperdine to get his master's in business. He and his brother end up co-founding Warrior Angel Foundation. So we're talking about someone who was totally disabled due to his trauma. He was blown up in his fourth tour of duty. And he, in 6 months, is on 13 medications, totally non-functional, as an effect of arguably either his trauma and or the unbelievable amount of drugs that he was on, narcotics and psychotropic medication. But he's totally off all that, and he's, you know, doing a phenomenal job with a charitable organization, 501(c), Warrior Angel Foundation in Texas. So that there's hope, and as Kim suggested, to see the movie, Amazon, they have it, it's like $3.99. It's not, it's a 90-minute movie, and it's right. Mm-hmm. It's 90 minutes or thereabouts. It's worth seeing because it's not me talking. It's the patients, our patients. 7 of the 10 cases that are in the movie are from our practice. One of them had a heart attack 20-some-odd years earlier that left him disabled. And within 6 months, he's back to fully functioning. And Alan's, you know, doing great, great time. We had a first responder, fireman, Sebi, on the program. He wasn't directly our patient. But there are other doctors throughout the United States that are working on similar premises. And to date, I think here in the United States, we've trained some 2,000 doctors in our science that we've developed over the past 30 years, specifically in TBI, 18 years or 19 years with the military. So that's been my joy, is seeing our veterans who have come back, who are hopeless, helpless, who are now in school, getting higher education degrees, opening businesses, as you'll see in the movie, quite explosions. So for me, it's putting into reality the sense of hope and giving an avenue by which people who commit to doing our program will get the benefits. And the beauty of our program is that it is scientific, objective laboratory testing through what's called a biomarker panel that we developed. It took me 14 years to develop. And a treatment regimen that took 16 years to develop in clinical application, and it's not for life. We have people in 2 months, 3 months, who go through the program, they're better, they taper off their treatment protocol, and they continue in life. We've got people 6 months, a year. Most of the studies that I report on are about a year. We do, or we have had people who are longer in the program, and that was because it was our early renditions of our treatment protocol. But in the past 4 years, we've accelerated in the improvement and the heightened quality of life because of some of our new technology, which was that 16 years of coming to fruition with our product, which is called Brain Rescue 3. And there's a video circulating around of a 93-year-old Korean War veteran who had dementia, who was on our protocol for 6 months, and his dementia is gone, which has been documented by his son, who's Special Forces, who I act as a consultant to his organization in Florida, Gray Team, and his father had dementia, and he asked, what can we do? I said, oh, we do ABC. Put him onto the protocol, and 65, 70 days later, the son calls me and says, his dementia is gone. I said, really? So we had a Skype call, and I sat there for half an hour quizzing Ed about things that challenge him in terms of dementia, Alzheimer's, and so forth, and he was just doing great. Jump ahead to last month, which is 6 months after he started program, and he was being interviewed for a sports program in Florida, and comparing the 3-month video that I was sent and the 6 month, you can see a continued improvement at now 94 years of age in his word skills, word recall, cognition, flow of speech, and his poise. You can just comparing the two short videos, you can see the improvement. So the key has been as we age, forget about trauma, stress, everything. As we age, we build up junk in our brain, which are inflammatory free radicals. We've all heard of free radicals and antioxidants and oxidative stress and so forth. And just through life, we build up these oxidative molecules, chemicals, which turn on bad switches in our brain that leads to the loss of brain function. So what we can do is we can put things into the system to counter it, to heal it. I mean, people take vitamin C because it's an antioxidant. They take tocopherols, which are the vitamin E's. They take vitamin A's, the retinoids, and they take other things, EGCG. I mean, there's a whole bunch of natural products that have thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of articles throughout the world where they've gone and done studies on it. And that is the source, that is the information I use to do the work that I do. I haven't really developed anything. I've stood on the shoulders of people who are more brilliant than I am, who did the science. The unfortunate issue is all the science is on the back burner. It's not in mainstream medical journals. It's in, Prevention Magazine might have some stuff. Life Extension will have some stuff. Some of these other alternative and complementary medicine journals will have the science and the studies that have been done. But the problem with these natural products is you can't patent them, so they're of no value to any pharmaceutical company that would want to take things that we've developed and put them into more hands than we're able to do, because the acknowledgement or the knowledge that, or awareness is the proper word, the awareness of what we've been doing has not gotten out there to the degree that we would have liked it to. And the movie Quiet Explosion, that was the premise of the movie. I had nothing to do with it. I don't own any of it. It's all my partner and his Jerry Shear. It didn't get out far enough, but it did win a lot of awards in 2021, the Movie of the Year Award, the Most Important Movie of the Year Award. I believe it was also in 2022 nominated for 2 Academy Awards. Didn't win them, but nonetheless was on the list. So it has merit. It has a lot of clear information, not my gobbledygook that I'm sharing with you here, but it has a lot to help to inspire you to look elsewhere. Traditional medicine is phenomenal. It's true. It's the time being spent with a healthcare provider is being curtailed. They are generally not able or capable to do in-depth assessments. That's why people in the private sector, like myself, insurance-based, in the private sector, are being overwhelmed with new clientele because they realize that within the traditional delivery of medicine, that it's minimized, where instead of maximized, it's minimized. So you don't get the full extent of the technology and the science that's available in front of us. MedBed's coming out, which will analyze and fix everything. Go look up and Google about MedBed's. But, I think I'll pause there, Kim.
Okay. I'll jump in for a minute while you're pausing.
Okay,
so let me back up. There was also, just in case you need just a hair more enticing, I don't happen to watch reality shows, but there's, for any of you that watch the Survivor show, Ben, who won, he's also, I think the only one you forgot. You got the first responder.
No, I didn't forget
in
Ben.
You didn't forget Ben?
No.
Well, he was also
Ben.
Military.
He was military, destitute, and when he got better, he ended up on Survivor winning the $1 million. I hate talking about that, but he won $1 million. He deserved it.
Well, he definitely did. But again, you'll be able to see that because what this is the stories of all of the people that Mark mentioned and then how their life changes through this treatment. There's a couple questions I want to ask about that. But before that, I'm going to back up for a minute because we talked about the psychology. A lot of people know people might be with TBI, PTSD, some of the other things you mentioned, may have problems with emotion regulation, getting angry. I remember back when I started, I heard somebody say that no two brain injuries are alike. And I thought, well, circumstances are different, but the brain is the brain. And so I started making a list of the more things that kept coming up with people that I interviewed. And short-term memory loss, this is also echoed in the people you feature that are featured in the movie, but short-term memory loss, trouble focusing our attention, which now, and I'll make a comment on that, we're hearing the words brain fog a lot as they apply to long COVID these days, neurofatigue or running out of energy, a brand of tired that isn't like your average person has ever experienced. Well, I get tired too. Yeah, you know, and I liken this neurofatigue to the battery on the phone. I have an older model of an Apple phone, and it seems that, I'll speak for myself, you know, I get up and I'm maybe 75% charged. And by 4 o'clock, I'm down to maybe 10%. And I have to decompress, whether that's taking a nap or just laying there and focusing on my breath in the dark in a quiet room. That puts my charge back up to take me to, I stay up till about midnight, brings me back up. But the charge and neurofatigue is, you know, when you hit that 10%, and you guys know from your phones, when it's in the red zone, there's nothing you can do. It's going to go off. And that's what neurofatigue is like for people with brain injury, just running out of steam and hitting the wall. Dizziness and balance issues. Cognitive deficits, there's a list of those, but I'll just leave it with processing things slower than before. You know, a lot of us used to be able to juggle six balls at the same time and do it proficiently, get everything done to the level of perfection that we expect, and now really have to just focus a ball at a time. Because if we default and try to juggle all six of those balls, they're going to start coming down on our head, or it's going to be a half-assed job. So we really need to be intently focused on the task at hand. I call it stay where our hands are. Aphasia, trouble recalling or understanding words. And not being able to handle overstimulation, also known as sensory overload. Good example of this is you're at a gathering and there are, like maybe we just did even over the holidays, a lot of this is going to be coming up for people, where multiple conversations are going on around you. And it's super hard to track. You know, if you're just sitting there with one other person talking, you might lose your spot, kind of blank out for a minute, but boy, you get people around the table and three different sets are going off into a conversation and you find yourself looking out the window because you just can't keep up. And then we go into the things you were talking about, anxiety, depression, chronic pain, sleep issues, and the culmination of stress. And I wasn't making fun of it, but, you know, with and your figures, whoever's figures, you know, the ones Brain Injury Association talks about and the film, you know, they're just a little bit different. But the key here is that everybody's heard of heart disease, diabetes, cancer, but there are approximately 2.5 million brain injuries a year, around 5.3 million people in the USA right now living with a permanent brain injury related disability. They say a brain injury happens every 8 seconds and that 1 in 60 people suffer one. And so I found it incredible for the 14 years that I've been here. You know, before that, I didn't know anything about TBI. When I came on here, there were 7 hosts. We were on 7 nights a week. They were all at TBI, and a guy said to the guy who owns our network, "She can't be here. She's an ABI." And I thought, well, wow, I've been called worse, but what the hell's an ABI? That wasn't one of the labels that had been attached to my brain bleed. And so an acquired brain injury. So now we say a TBI is an assault to the brain that comes from the outside. And an ABI is an assault to the brain that originates on the inside, stroke, aneurysm, AVM, loosely to separate the two. But now I notice, and I only go during Awareness Month to grab some statistics to the association website because they don't really have anything to help us that are survivors now, if you know what I mean. But they, you know, there's a board and very seldom is there anyone on the board that suffered a brain injury. So, you know, they have the statistics there to read, but, this is so prevalent and people know so little unless it touches their life in some way. Every week, every month, you know, depending when I don't have a doctor on, you know, survivor guests are talking about how, you know, the silent killer, you know, the silent disease, because unless you have an obvious tell, a lot of the things that go on that we suffer psychologically, physically, people don't believe us. People think we're exaggerating. People think we're crazy. Now, the cycle you touched upon and that so many of us have gone through is, now in my case, I needed a surgeon. He did surgery. And saved my life, and that's a good thing. But his marker was I could walk and talk, and he got the clip in there and got me back together. I was alive when I wasn't expected to be, so I was a success and sent me down the road. And he happened to be a visiting neurosurgeon, which was a blessing. That was divine intervention because Nobody could have done what he did to save my life in our town, at that time. But when I started having problems like the ones I just line listed, you know, I went to a variety of different doctors, and ultimately, you know, they tried to give me different meds and send me to physical therapy, but where they always end up sending not just me, but almost everybody I have on here is through the psychiatric channels, because when they can no longer do something, anything in the traditional medical model to deal with the kind of things we talk about, then they make it psychiatric and send you there. And that used to really piss me off in my early years here. And then, you know, I started to, you gotta have a sense of humor sometimes. You know, I started saying, if you weren't a little crazy before you got your brain in, you know, after you got your brain injury, once they put you in the system, you are a little crazy. You know, you might need an hour or two on the couch, spill out the frustration, you know, and the pain and the confusion of not knowing what's going on with you. But what you probably don't need is the medication. You know, if you've been around long enough with your brain injury, you've lived through the era of Paxil, the era of Effexor, the era of da-da-da-da. You know, you can tell whenever something is a popular on a commercial, if you went into a support group, a psychiatric support group, and went around to each person, they would be on that medication that you're seeing on TV. And now I've thrown up my hands, because the one that they're advertising is, if your antidepressant isn't working well enough, we've got another pill to give you to boot up the pill that's already not working for you, that's going to be the answer to all your problems. And so, you know, things like DBT and CBT and EMDR and all of the things I've gone and tried on my own, like everyone else, were hit and miss. You know, we would hear about things, read it in an article, hear it on a show like this, decide to go and try it. Doctors never tell us about those things that don't come in a little round buffered form inside of a pill bottle. And so that's been a problem. And when I started hearing about long COVID not so long ago, I had to just shake my head, because those symptoms that I just read you, my top 12, that I hear not everybody with a brain injury has all 12, but everybody with a brain injury has some combination of some of the things on that list of 12. I just hear it over and over and over. Now I'm hearing it about long COVID. And my God, people are paying attention to the words brain fog. We've been talking about it for 20 years, and no one believed it. And now suddenly, you know, long COVID comes up, and people are hearing the words brain fog like it's the first time it's been mentioned. What it told me was that virus manifest or traveled through the brain, because, and you're the doctor, I'm not. I've got to clarify, I'm not a doctor, I'm a survivor. So don't take my word for it. We'll ask Dr. Gordon when I shut up, since he took his break and I jumped in here for a minute. My feeling after hearing and watching a few videos on the long COVID is that the virus traveled through the brain at some point for the people that are having half of what I just read off of that list, which are all have been associated with brain injury. And then the last thing I'm going to say, and then I'm going to throw the mic back over to you for the rest of the show if you want it, is I'm so happy about Quiet Explosions. And again, really, really, really want to encourage you guys to find it on Amazon and watch this film. I remember, and I don't even know what year it was, when Concussion came out. And I talked about that a lot. I remember clearly it was like Christmas Eve day here when it came out, whatever year it was. And silly me, you know, I thought because I do this kind of work on the show that my husband and I should go and see that movie. And I sit pretty close. And for those of you that remember how it opens, of course, you've got amplified sound in a movie theater than when you're watching TV. I actually had a panic attack watching. I had to get up and leave the room for a few minutes. And I got it. In fact, Dr. Amalu, I met him when he was here in town. He was a guest on the show. And I had people throwing tomatoes because, you know, basically our society is like ancient Rome and the gladiators. They don't want to hear, you know, they don't want to hear the NFL lied. They don't want to hear that someone's life is at risk playing football. They didn't want to hear it. So early shows that I had in that year or two after the movie and those guests, you know, that came on to talk about that, some notables that were talking at the time, the audience didn't want to hear it. But you know what happened and will happen with this movie is eventually, sadly, when the bodies start piling up and the health conditions similar, deteriorating health conditions come up, and it can no longer be denied, then people have to pay attention. And some people are going to change because of it. You know, they're going to change how they go get treatment. They're going to change whether they participate. They're going to change how they think or how they were judging people. There will be change, but other people won't. And all I can say about those people is that now they're making an informed decision and there's no excuses. For example, now I think lawsuits should be over in football. The cat's been out of the bag long enough. And now if you decide to do that, you're assuming the risk. You talked about some articles, and I'm not saying that people shouldn't. I'm grateful to our military, but they haven't been treated so well by the VA when they get home. And things like what you're talking about haven't been addressed. And Andrew and Adam are examples like that. I've got a couple hosts that I brought on Friday nights. Good examples there. Three-time Purple Heart recipient and the president, I think, right now, the Gold Star Families Association. He also has a Silver Star. And then his co-host with Special Forces, both of them have a brain injury. I have a lot of veterans on my show, and they're obviously taking on a lot more than a football player for a lot less of a paycheck. And to have the kind of treatment they haven't had, you know, the blast injuries are really, I think, the hallmark injury until they brought up smoke pits. But the blast injuries of our last 20-year conflict, and that just had not been being addressed. And the other part of it is the communication. There's a lot of veterans I talk to that don't want to go to the VA and have this conversation. Fear of consequences, not mine to go into. But whether they do choose to talk about it or they don't, they haven't been getting the treatment that they deserve for the job that they've done for all of us. And so my hope, like some things have changed a little, painfully small over there in football, like a lot of people I know that were avid watchers don't feel comfortable. My husband's one of them, and it's not just because I do radio. I'm a night owl. He's a morning person, so he went to bed about an hour ago, but the way he puts it is that he simply lost the taste for watching football after he heard every now and again he'll listen to one of my shows the next day on demand or the next week on demand, because I've had some notable NFL players on, and so you know, he's mentioned it to a few friends of his, and they've listened to the person get interviewed and changed. You know, that sometimes the change is so small, but then you see people like Chris Borland just say, nah, I want to have a life beyond football. Limited shelf life here, being a football star, I just don't want to do this. So you can see some change out there, and people are no longer throwing tomatoes when I have shows about the effects of concussion, post-concussion syndrome. You might want to talk more about CTE. There are a couple Facebook groups of former, whether it was high school, college, NFL players that are all in this group who, and again for the audience, and Dr. Gordon mentioned it earlier, there's no, if I'll just say about CTE and then you can take that word off the table if you want to, but they are in a group with that title on it. It's like Parkinson's. There's no definitive, well, I'll take that off the table. I'll just say there's not a definitive test that says you have this. What they have is a list of symptoms, and if the dart hits enough of the symptoms, you get that diagnosis. So those people that are in that group were athletes who suffered multiple concussions. Some lost consciousness. As you pointed out, that's not mandatory. People always used to think it was. It's not. And they've been diagnosed with a death sentence, basically, which doesn't have to be, which is the hope that you're going to talk about as soon as I shut up in a moment. But in the traditional medical model, when they got that diagnosis that day, as you know, in the traditional medical model, there is no cure. And so you've got a group of hundreds of people a lot of them probably listening tonight who've been diagnosed with that condition and have that prognosis. That's all I got. Now I'll take a break.
Yeah, it's a lot. First thing I'll start off with, concussion came out in 2015. And Bennett O'Malley is here in California, in Lodi, California, so we've communicated a couple of times. Anyway, he was invited to be in the movie Quiet Explosions, but he was doing his own routine. Anyway, let me circle and try to hit all the major points that you brought up. If there's anything anyone listening to this interview will take away, it's the fact that everything that happens to us starts the process of inflammation in the brain. So the issue with long COVID, the virus precipitates throughout the body an inflammatory response, and it's a specific group of chemicals called cytokines. You've heard of cytokine storm. Well, those cytokines can be produced in joint problems, in ulcers in your gut, from viral infections, from Lyme's disease, from leaky gut, from dysbiosis, from certain medication, from alcohol, will elicit the body's response by production of these things called cytokines. And they go right into the brain. And when they go into the brain, they turn on the cells in the brain that are called glial cells, specifically astrocytes and microglia, and it causes them to start dumping these inflammatory chemicals. So the question is, what is the cause for brain fog? What's the cause for low mental energy? And the cause of it is these cytokines disrupt the cell's ability to make energy. And the energy we call ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And the ATP is produced in these organelles in the cell called mitochondria. And if you disrupt their ability to generate ATP, you lose energy. So what happens when you lose energy of function? It's like you've got a brownout at home. So instead of your lights being bright white, they're dingy, they're dull, and you can't see anything. So what happens in the brain is that exact same thing, is that the energy required, the necessity of energy to run systems, you start losing systems and you start having cognitive impairment. You start having memory loss, short-term, long-term memory loss. You have inability to remember names, places, activities, things that you've done. And over a course of time, we talked about acute earlier and chronic, the longer these processes occur, unmitigated or undefended, you start developing more system failures. And in that process of prolonged inflammation, you develop things that they've labeled that's called depression. Depression and insomnia are due to the fact that inflammation stops enzymes. Enzymes are chemicals that convert one product to another. So L-tryptophan to serotonin. You lose serotonin, which is the fabled marker for depression. And serotonin gets converted to melatonin, which is the sleep product, through loss of another enzyme, decarboxylase. So what happens is you lose serotonin, depression occurs. You lose melatonin, you can't sleep. And with prolonged lack of sleep, you get sleep deprivation syndrome, which is associated with body aches and pains, heightened pain, depression, anxiety, panic attacks, joint problems, mobility problems, and so forth. And that's at the beginning. And then over a prolonged period of time, you start having more and more like a spiral effect, catch-22 spiral effect, whatever word you want to apply to it, where you start getting more inflammatory chemicals and cytokines, more of them. And what happens is they start destroying the tissue in the brain. And that's what is being called CTE in repetitive trauma, so, you know, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which now is being ascribed to people exposed in the military to repetitive blasts, gunfire, IEDs, explosive charges, EOD people who are responsible for gaining entrance into blocked areas. And they develop from this repetitive trauma, blast wave trauma. They develop the progression and leads to these little holes in the brain. There's a doc by the name of Daniel Pearl, who specializes in neuropathology, who has done the biopsies of 20,000 brains. And what he found in these veterans who were all given a diagnosis of PTSD, he found physical damage to the brain, which is the CTE pattern, found also in football players and boxers and what have you. And he asked a very important question. He said, how is it that these people were given a purely psychiatric diagnosis? That's why PTSD is 100% psychiatric illness, theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that these people labeled with PTSD are being found in 100% of the cases to have lesions, damage to the brain tissue that's identical to what is found in football players and boxers that they call CTE? So they're all related. And what the relationship is this inflammation. But it's an issue of how long they've been exposed to what level of inflammation. Now, the question that I started asking 18 years ago when I started working with the military is, how is it that this group of Army that I was seeing at one time, they were all exposed to the same explosion? And why is it that some of them developed symptoms that were very, very mild and short-lived, and others life-threatening damage that led to depression, super-duper medication, and suicide ideation, if not suicide attempts? The question is, why is there this spectrum of people from nothing to everything? And it turns out that it's due to what we call biological resiliency. And what that is the ability of the body to deal with challenges like repetitive blast exposure. And what are the components that make up this biological resiliency? For us, it is nutrition, because there are certain components in our nutrition and supplements that give us added protection, like the gamma tocopherol, the N-acetylcysteine, the glutathione, the vitamin C, the omega-3s, the EPAs, the DHAs. These give us a deeper layer of protection. And things that will take away from it is poor nutrition, alcohol, certain medication and drugs, and lack of exercise, because there's protective molecules that are generated in exercise along with growth hormone and testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. And they have a less quality of biological resilience. That's why, say, a group of people exposed to the same trauma can have different outcomes. They're unique. Yeah, genetics play a role in it. Underlying medical conditions can play a role in it. Circling back to what they call CTE, it turns out a study was done by the NFL, and they found that if a football player had one concussion on the field, they were 19 times more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease between the age of 30 and 49 years of age, which is very young. I'm working now with Ring of Brotherhood, which is an organization that has been looking for means to protect the boxers from the progression of their repetitive trauma from being in the ring when they leave the ring. So we have a case right now where he had a horrible beating in the ring and subsequently developed a stroke. And 28 years later, he's now getting better. He's regaining certain aspects that he lost due to the CTE, the repetitive punch drunk, and the Parkinson's. He's getting better because we're addressing the underlying cause. And if you address the causation, why are these symptoms occurring, as opposed to, oh, he's got symptoms that look like Parkinson's, give him anti-Parkinson drugs. He's got symptoms that look like Alzheimer's, give him anti-Alzheimer's medication. He's got depression, give him anti-depression medication. So instead of treating the causation, the root cause, what is being done is they're being treated for the symptoms. They're masking the symptoms. So what we've been doing is through a biomarker panel, which is 28 markers, we look at this results, and we have a software program that analyzes it, I have three daughters, two are docs, and one of them works with me and takes care of all the civilians. I take care of the military. And it took my daughter, Allison, about 18 months to become proficient, working face-to-face with me every day, to become proficient at what we do. The software does it in 15 minutes. It analyzes it based upon how we've manually analyzed it and then incorporates other things, surgical procedures that were done on them, removal of glands, medication and how they influence our lab results, and it comes up with interpretation of the lab relative to a multitude of factors, and then gives you a recommended treatment. So we have about 111 clinics. I don't own a single, I own one. I don't own anybody else's clinic. They don't pay me. I just teach them how to do this, how to do the analysis, and then they use the software to help them in analyzing it if they don't have the 30-some-odd years like I have in this area of hormone endocrinology and neuroendocrinology. So we have an understanding of this inflammation that leads to the problems. And we've got people with what they're calling long COVID who've gotten better because you address the cause. The virus or the impact of the virus on our immune system turned on the switches that are dumping inflammatory chemicals into our body that gets into our brain. And as long as that process is ongoing, you're not going to be able to fix anything. You have to focus in on the problem. And that problem is this excessive production of cytokines. And what happens is, or what we see is happening, is that the approach for long COVID has become a psychiatric model where they're treating the symptoms and not treating the cause. So that's why we have people who are suicidal with long COVID, because it's the same thing as our military. You know, they talk about PTSD. People say, how come you don't believe in PTSD and I don't believe in CTE? And the reason is because they all originate from a trauma. And traumatic brain injury or neurotrauma, that it causes neuroinflammation, neuro being brain, is what the problem is. And, you know, in I don't believe that Alzheimer's disease should be looked at as a psychiatric condition. You generate impairment of the mental health circuitry, the limbic system, the amygdala, and so forth that regulate our emotions, the frontal lobe, which is our judgment and ability to do sequential activities. And that is what gets taken out by inflammation, by things like autoimmune diseases, alcohol, which is extremely damaging to the circuits. And that's how you start developing, you know, these problems. I mean, in alcoholism, you have, you know, Werner-Kauffer syndrome, which is due to burning out circuitry in the brain from alcohol, and you start seeing pink elephants and giraffes, and you start making up, confabulating, making up stuff, and it's because of the inflammation. And if you address the inflammation and you utilize, you know, it took us 16 years to develop this one of our key products, which has been doing extremely well, and, you know, you address the inflammation. And things like Motrin can help, but it'll burn your stomach out. You need things that get into the brain a lot easier. So our technology uses a patented delivery system that delivers the composition of our product. The Brain Rescue 3 has 16 components in it, and it gets into the brain and does the work. And some of the side effects of it gets into, you know, joints in the stomach. It improves stomach-related issues. How do I know this? Because I've had gastroenterologists, specialists in the gut, following some of our patients, and they get better with their GI complaints. Orthopedics, orthopods, following some of our veterans with disability from the VA relative to orthopedic injuries. So the inflammation is the key. If we address the inflammation, we can start seeing improvement. And, you know, every day I get an email or I get one of our monthly forms filled out by these almost 9,000 people where they rate. They're subjectively rate themselves on psychological, physiological, and physical functioning. And you see, they start getting better. Migraines disappear. We have a gal, and I talked about it on my last Joe Rogan show, 15, a gal who flies in from Sweden who had moderate Parkinson's. And 3 months later, she's got 70% improvement in her Parkinson's. And we've got people with multiple sclerosis who have improved 50, 70%. And that's because they're all inflammatory conditions. And then the video that I shared with Kim of Edward, the 93, now 94-year-old Korean War vet, was on one of our protocols called the Phase 2 protocol, which is gleaning a lot of support because it's inexpensive. You don't need a doctor. You don't need labs. You do it for 90 days. If you do 50% or better in 90 days, continue on it. And the beauty of our treatment protocol is that it's not for life. We look at, you know, 1 year time. Yeah, we've got some people 18 months that are on it, but we see people in 90 days getting better and start looking at coming off of it. We've got a major out of Texas who was on our program for 6 months, ended up getting off of 8 medications and going back to work, as opposed to being disabled, disgruntled, suicidal. These are the benefits. It's inflammation that causes it. And how do we know? We have people with psoriatic arthritis, an autoimmune disease, and there's a medication out there called Enbrel, which counteracts the inflammatory process. And what happens is their physical symptoms disappear. And in this population with psoriatic arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, I think it's upwards of 83% who have depression. And what happens when they treat their inflammation with this medication, not only does their physical component abate, but their psychiatric improves, which goes to show us how regulated the mental health is by inflammation, and it's negative. And we know Parkinson's disease. I gave a little talk about this one area yesterday where there's a chemical that's generated with inflammation, and the inflammation can occur from any kind of physical and non-physical trauma, is that it generates a chemical called peroxynitrite that selectively damages the cells in the brain that make dopamine. And without dopamine, that's how you develop, you know, the findings in Parkinson's. And so by stopping that process and then putting in things that reverse the damage, you get improvement in the Parkinson's, as this young lady from 53, I think she is, from Sweden. But we've had people.
Can I ask you a question? I'm sorry, on that, we're just on Parkinson's. Does it make a difference if it's genetic as opposed to
great question.
A byproduct of a brain injury?
Yeah. You know, my perception, though genetics is not my strong point, was one of my weakest in undergraduate. But I think, you know, in the studies that have been done on the genome, they find people with genes for cancer, and they're smoking cigarettes, and they don't develop cancer of the lung, or they don't develop gut cancer. I believe that there are things called operons or on-off switches, and epigenetics, which are things we do in our life that can alter our gene expression. So there are things that we can do to negatively influence our genome to initiate negative processes like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and cancer, lung cancer, and what have you. And there are positive things that we can do to alter the potential of the gene being turned on. And that's what it's about. You can have the genes, but they are meaningless until they're turned on. My feeling in things like the epigene for Alzheimer's disease or any of the genes for other things is there are things that we will do to turn it on. And what they're trying to figure out is what's the most common cause for turning on certain genes. I mean, I've seen people in my practice who smoked for 37 years, a pack a day, never had any problems with their lungs. And then we've seen, you know, people who have never smoked who end up with a form of cancer of the lungs that, you know, is not the traditional cancer associated with cigarette smoking, not squamous epithelial. So having the genes does not guarantee, to say it for lack of another word, doesn't guarantee that you're going to get whatever the genes that you have signal for or are causative for. You have to turn them on.
But if you do, if it is, I'm asking specifically, like this woman from Sweden you were talking about, did she have a head injury, or to your knowledge?
Yep.
Did she have?
She had a lot of head injuries.
Okay. So she
and
had
if you go look
injury.
At the, you start look at the new literature for Alzheimer's disease more than 10 years ago, they started seeing the combination of trauma being a precipitate. The study from the NFL, one on the field concussion increased their risk of by 19 times relative to the general population at an earlier age of 30 to 49 years of age. So there are things that can be done to create this. And she had a multitude of injuries. Also, she was an avid tennis player, singles and doubles, and, you know, had her falls and had her car accidents and had her bicycle accidents in Sweden and so forth. But there's a study we did January and February of this year, random of our patient population met the military, and looked at those that were given the diagnosis of TBI by the VA and those that were given a diagnosis of PTSD by the VA. In closer interview and review of their medical records that they filled out for us, 100% of those who had the label of PTSD also had a TBI in their history. But the problem is the DOD, Department of Defense, and the VA, Veterans Administration, have a criteria for designating what a TBI is that is so high. The criteria to fall into, yeah, you have a TBI, is so high that people don't meet those criteria, and they end up being put into the PTSD group. Now, the area that I deal in is the largest population of TBI symptomatic TBI, which is 85% of the people have what's called a mild traumatic brain injury. In a mild traumatic brain injury, they could have been knocked unconscious, they could have just been knocked down, they just could have been exposed to a blast wave, and they all develop symptomatology. An interesting study that was done by the American Academy of Radiology, neuroradiology, I think it was, what they looked at were people who had been knocked unconscious to the ground by whatever trauma. And they looked at their CT scans and MRIs. 80%+ were negative. So you made the statement early in your dialogue, you made the statement that people don't, doctors, healthcare providers, don't believe you because you don't have the classical findings that would objectively support them. But they don't have, they don't go after more objective testing. They look at MRI and CT scan, which are usually done acutely, CT scan first, for head trauma, and they don't see anything. They don't see the bleeds. They don't see any calcification that can take years to develop. They don't see subdural hematomas. They don't see AV fissures. They don't see anything in the brain. They don't. I mean, they see the brain, but they don't see any trauma signs, contusions. So when they say, "Oh, you didn't have a brain injury," so your symptoms are psychiatric, and therefore you're PTSD. That's why we have so many people who are so frustrated because they have valid symptoms. And when they share them with the doctor in their mind or the healthcare provider in their mind says, well, he was knocked unconscious, or yeah, he was knocked unconscious, but he has no signs on MRI or CT scan. Therefore, he's a malignant. He's looking for secondary gains, straight out liar. And that's where the frustration develops. But when you start doing assessment of neurochemistry, as we do, you'll see the disruption of whether or not it's growth hormone, prolactin, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, luteinizing hormone, follicle-stimulating hormone, cortisol, ACTH, whatever. There's a whole bunch of markers that will help us to understand what's going on in the brain. And once you see the pattern and you have a history of trauma, you know the trauma has precipitated inflammation. So it's a given. Everybody has inflammation. Just aging without trauma, you develop inflammation. And then you look for the hormonal deficiencies. And if you fix the inflammation, a lot of times you can fix the hormone deficiency. And this came out of a 2013 study where they actually saw that inflammation shuts down the control area of the brain called the hypothalamus, which controls the pituitary, the master gland in the brain, and will shut down its ability to release the hormones that tell your body to make hormones. Follicle-stimulating hormone turns on sperm and egg production. Luteinizing hormone turns on testosterone and estrogen production. ACTH turns on cortisol production. Growth hormone-releasing hormone turns on growth hormone that goes to the liver and turns on 10 different proteins that regulate all these very important healing processes and protective processes in our body, modulates the inflammation of our body. And growth hormone is the number one hormone that is deficient in head trauma, with or without loss of consciousness. So, with that mouthful, we have the tools and technology to look at a deeper level to determine whether or not, you know, complications precipitated by your trauma, whether or not you have loss of consciousness or not. And then the majority of medications don't work. In fact, there are a few medications that make my job like narcotics, because narcotics shut down luteinizing hormone, thyroid-stimulating hormone, thyroid production, thyroid production in the brain. So you can have medication-induced hormone deficiency. And from viral infections, we are seeing infertility And the infertility is coming from loss of production of follicle-stimulating hormones that make sperm and egg, and luteinizing hormone that make the hormones that help to regulate, you know, for a pregnancy. So I'm seeing a lot of problems. And these are all addressable. They're all identifiable and diagnostics through biomarker panel. And then you treat it accordingly. And that's what we've been doing since 2004, specifically with Headtron, 2004 onward. That's what, 19 years. So.
Yeah, I think the last time, a couple things I want to ask you, but I don't want to, I'm going to go the other way so I don't forget, because it is important. Something Andrew said in the film was he took himself off all his medication. I found that a little worrisome because I don't want everybody out there just going off their medication. I felt like there should maybe be one more sentence to clarify that because that's dangerous.
Right. Yep.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Back.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't take any patient off of any medication that they came into my practice on. I send them back to their doctor and have their doctor take them off the medication. The problem that I find is that because of the time that the individual was on any specific medication, it should regulate a little bit more intensely the rate at which they detox from medication. So I've found a couple of specialists in neuropharmacology that I refer the patients to have an expert in detoxing do it, because the doctors who my experience, this is only limited to the doctors that I've interacted with, some of them don't use the science to detoxify or the time that a patient's on it to detoxify. They look in the PDR and says, detoxification will happen in X amount of days, weeks, or whatever. Or else they put them onto a standardized kind of detox. Okay, cut the medication in half for 2 weeks, then cut it in half for another 2 weeks, and then every other day. That doesn't work. And it doesn't work because if the individual is on a multitude of medications and has been on the medications for longer than 3 months, you need to do extensive detoxification, one medication at a time.
Right.
And
that's what I was thinking
of.
Neuropharmacologist
is the key individual. Unfortunately, there aren't a lot of them out there, neuropharmacologists, but they're the best. Okay? There are a couple of psychiatrists that I use that, what's that?
I'm sorry. I was going to say that would be the problem, finding one of those in your area. I spoke with my shrink about going off all of my medication. I said I didn't find it helpful. And I'll bet you a lot of people are getting the same answer. And the answer was you would certainly know it if you weren't on it. You'd notice it if you weren't on it, how much it's helping.
Well, I tend to agree with that statement. It's because the effect of some of the medication is to subdue the neurocircuitry so you don't have those feelings coming in, whether or not it's depression, anxiety. That's the function of these medications, ideally. But the question is, when were you deficient in Paxil? When were you deficient in Prozac? I've got a tongue-in-cheek presentation under the media page at my website, tbihelpnow.org, which is called In Search of the Prozac Gland, which basically goes through the premise of, you know, why are we putting these medications into our system when we haven't first checked to see what's wrong with the system? You know, is there a deficiency that can cause it? I mean, if you look at, just to take something, and if, for instance, if you go to Google Scholar and you look up vitamin D and depression, you'll see 1.2 million articles that have been written about it. 1.2 million articles. If you look at vitamin D and anxiety, I think it's like 400,000 articles have been written about the relationship. You know, and vitamin D is a miracle hormone. It's a hormone. And what really brought the benefits of vitamin D to the forefront is during this pandemic that we had, that people were reading and starting to go on to high doses of vitamin D. And their neurologists and their cardiologists started seeing people with cardiac problems improving. That's why there's 2.7 million articles on vitamin D protecting the heart. Just go to Google Scholar. GoogleScholar.com, or put in Scholar on Google and you'll get to Google Scholar. It's incredible amount of medical scientific literature from around the world that they have. And, you know, that's, I spend most of my days when I'm not directly interacting with veterans reading. There's unbelievable science out there. We're just not utilizing it. And that's, you know, my focus is finding the science that is presented. Not just one article, but not unless there's 10, 15 articles stating the same thing will I incorporate it into what I'm, you know, my reading. I have a program that collects my reading materials. There has to be a lot of repetition by different science centers throughout the world, corroborating each other's science. And the reason for that is, out of some of the major Lancet in England, and then here, I forgot which was here, was Mayo Clinics, I think it was, they talked about reproducibility, where the science that is done by a research center, that if another doctor tries to replicate it, there's 70% failure. They can't reproduce it in 70% of the cases. And even by the doctor who did the research, the initial research, goes back and tries to do it again, 70% failure rate. So what does that tell you? A lot of the science that we're reading is not reproducible. That's part of the science, the dogma in science, is that it's reproducible if it's real science. But there's a lot of fudging going on to present, you know, viewpoints, political viewpoints. Okay, so anyway, I use psychiatrists. I've got a couple of really great psychiatrists in our network. We've got like 27, 28 psychiatrists. We have a Dr. DeMaia in Punta Gorda, Florida, who's been just unbelievable in turning her patient population around. What is she doing different? She's doing a 28-point biomarker panel, and then treating the people with their deficiencies and with anti-inflammation. Every week she sends me a report on her cases. She came to us 3 years ago. She was depressed herself because she's a residency-trained, board-certified psychiatrist, a multitude of other certifications, been doing the work for 10, 15 years, and she wasn't getting the outcome that she felt. So she came to us and got trained, and her world is, you know, she's doing exactly what I'm doing. We're getting a lot of resolve in our psychiatric conditions. Now, there's an area called illness behavior, which is something that I was started to read a couple of years ago, where when people are given a label of a medical condition, they try to live up to it. And in living up to it, they accept it, and they live their life with whatever label they're given. as opposed to saying, wait a second, I just heard that inflammation caused depression, anxiety, bipolar, obsessive compulsive, and all that, but the medical community is saying, no, you got to use antidepressants for this. Mm-hmm. So they're stuck psychologically in this area of, I was told I'm a depressive person, therefore I need antidepressants. How come my doctor never asked me about my 3 car accidents I had, or the fact that I had a traumatic delivery, or the fact that I was a skateboarder or a roller skater, or I played contact sports? You know, I played football from Pop Warner, Pee Wee, Pop Warner, whatever, all the way up to college. And now I can't get a job because I'm depressed. I'm cloistered in my house because I can't go out there. I've got agoraphobia. So we've got to reassess. And one of the things that we teach our docs is the first thing you have to do is go back into the history and start digging into their history. Now, I know 100% of our patients have had traumas. I mean, in the study we did at the beginning of the year, where we had 79 people in this study. It was random. They were sent an invitation to 500 people, and they were given a week. In that week, 79 people responded to come into the program. And in that group, 59 of them were PTSD by the VA, but they never talked about their TBI. It was in their medical records, that 24 pages that they filled out for us, where it had their TBI, whether or not it was from football or MMA before they enlisted in the military, or else, you know, during the military, being, you know, some kind of trauma that was below the criteria for the DOD and the VA to call it TBI. So, with that said and done, any other areas that you'd like to have me address or discuss?
Yeah, maybe so. We're hearing a lot of talk now as far as obviously your protocol is a proprietary blend, for lack of a better word, but we're hearing a lot now as people are getting wise, they're still taking, you know, lining up, and I always say if you open your hand for the first pill, they start multiplying, and suddenly you're on a lot of different medications, and there are people that aren't happy with that and feeling like that's the protocol in the traditional medical model because they don't have time. When you say, you know, the practitioners need to go back and look at a person's history, shit, how are they going to do that in 15 minutes? You know, they aren't going to do that. And if it's anything that isn't directly, I'll tell you the word he used, my internist, not in his wheelhouse. And that was on an unrelated condition. That had to do with hormonal stuff I was asking him about because I think I'm probably full of inflammation. Not his wheelhouse. So then I asked him another question, and he told me he thought my psychiatrist wasn't doing me any favors. Okay, now he wasn't going to address any of those things any further than to say what he did. You know, if it's not exactly the pinpoint that I work on, you know, we're not going to get any further than that in 15 minutes. I asked him about doing some different blood work than what he does in the average physical, which is almost nothing now. I don't know if you've noticed, it's a whole lot different when you go get a physical these days than it was 20 years ago. You don't pee in a bottle anymore. They're not doing as much testing on the blood work. I don't even know what they're looking at, but there aren't as many categories as there used to be. So, you know, one of the ways we pay for health insurance for everybody is by giving less service. My observation. So that's a little hard to do, but just to address it really quickly, we have been hearing a lot about things like CBD and the magic of CBD. And now more recently to me, I guess I've caught a couple articles that surprised me, and then watched a video on it about psychedelics. That was a throwback to decades ago. So what do you think about either of those things? Because we know that everybody has heard of CBD by now, and that, like, our state is never going to be legal for anything that has THC. So it's strictly CBD with the tiny little bit they can slide in there without getting busted. But I mean, all of a sudden, overnight, on every street corner, there's one of these CBD places, and they're touting it to be a medical thing, not a catch-a-buzz thing. I mean, so they're saying there's a medical benefit to it, and then this new conversation to me on psychedelics. That's all I was going to say. Two new things.
Got it. There is a benefit to CBD. CBD will block the CB1 receptor in the brain, reducing inflammation. So CBD does have a benefit there. More so, CBD blocks the ACE2 receptor, which allows for COVID to get into the cell. So in people who, I mean, there are studies out there, people who have been on CBD for sleep, for pain, they didn't get the COVID. They haven't gotten COVID. So CBD is valid in traumatic brain injury. Okay? Talking about your PAT, which is psychedelic-assisted therapies, I work with about 8 companies, and I just had an article published on psychedelics. What is it about? In order for you to maximize the benefits of psychedelics, you first got to take care of the inflammation in the brain. Why? Because when you put a chemical into the system that's supposed to go into the brain to function in the brain to fix the depression, addiction, and so forth, you need to have relatively good chemistry in the brain for the compound, ibogaine, ayahuasca, MDMA, LSD, psilocybin, in order for those chemicals to function in the brain, the brain's chemistry has to be supportive. If the brain's chemistry is not supportive and blocks it, how do you get your benefit? You have to give more. So with fixing the brain, and this is a project that we have with 2 companies, that one of them is Weight in Jamaica, and the other one is Heroic Heart Foundation, which is Jesse Gould, who is military. He founded this company, and he works with some great people, and he's out there in Pennsylvania, in Texas, in California, in Oregon, in Colorado, where else? New Jersey, don't know if New York, but there's a paper out there that shows the states in which, one, the psychedelics are in what's called Schedule 1. Schedule 1 are medications that have no medical benefits, and they're highly addictive. And that was what psilocybin and all its partners were put into in 1971. And it turns out that they're not addictive, and they are medically beneficial, and that was 1993 when Harvard started doing the research on it, and now, you know, the state of Texas, through my partner Andrew and Mark Scottrell and Governor, past Governor Rick, well, I'm blocking out his name, Rick Perry from Texas, they got a bill, HB 1802, passed in 2021, which funded Baylor Medical Center to do research on psilocybin. So Texas is on board. So there are more states that are decriminalizing these psychedelics. Oregon and Colorado, it's legal to use for treating these people, the people with it. But most people are going outside the country. They're going to Jamaica, Curacao, Mexico, Peru, and Peru, to go through these either ritual procedures or just getting the medication under supervision by a healthcare provider. And they're coming back with phenomenal stories. Marcus, what is his name? He and his wife have another organization, I think it's in Texas too, where they're going around the country getting politicians to look at the science. And, you know, they're thinking back, oh, LSD, Purple Osley, 1960s, and so forth and so on. But psilocybin was available in 1953 from a doctor who brought it in from Mexico and started doing research through a number of academic centers from 53 until it was banned in 71. And I won't get into that dialogue, but it was banned and then 93 it started back up. But these are tools. These are medicinal tools that are real medications. And, you know, the article that I wrote was defined some of the benefits. There are tons of articles. One of the benefits of psilocybin is it drops inflammation in the brain, one of the side effects. Aside from the psychedelic effect, which is not the psychedelic effect, really, it's the fixing of neurocircuitry through stimulation of specific receptors in the brain. So this is, they're valid products. We just have to get rid of the old stigmata that was thrust down our throats by the pharmaceutical companies because they didn't want competition against their antidepressant medications that started coming out in the 60s. They didn't want competition, so they ruled the roost because every aspect of psychedelic research in 1971 was cut off, was made illegal. Academic institutions,
yeah.
Harvard, Yale, Princeton, UCLA, USC, couldn't do any research. And the research has already shown that it helped with alcohol addiction, cigarette smoking, tobacco addiction, and depression and anxiety. The literature's there. Just got to look for it. Just got to read it. It's all there. But the push is going on with politicians and states, with organizations, and let's see, Amber and Marcus. Yeah. Organizations. There are a lot of organizations. As I said, I've interacted with eight of them. There are two of them that I strongly work with. The Wake one in Jamaica, their medical staff have gone through our training and understand that if you fix the chemistry of the brain, the need for the psychedelic might not be as prominent as if you don't fix the brain. And also by fixing the brain, things like HBOT, hyperbaric oxygen therapy works better. Electromagnetic stimulation. I just did a second lecture for International Society for Neuro Research and Neurofeedback and Research. They understood that correcting the chemistry of the brain will make their technology work better. It sticks, as we call it, whether or not it's QED or Loretta protocol for doing the techniques, the magnetic resonance. So you have to have the foundation of the chemistry of the brain needs to be brought as close to normal, or we call it a neuro-permissive environment, because it starts healing itself. And literature, you know, supports it, how these hormones in the brain help to repair damaged neurons to the blood-brain barrier, to the vessels in the brain. And one of the things with stroke or bleeding in the brain from whatever modality, is that the hemoglobin, which is within the red blood cells, has in the middle of it an iron molecule. And that iron molecule, when there's bleeding in the brain and the evacuation or the washing out of all the blood isn't complete, the iron is released into the tissue of the brain, and it sets up a reaction called the Fenton reaction, which induces inflammation, which triggers a process of all these nasty free radicals that damage the brain and turn on the glial cells, the microglia and the astrocytes, to start dumping inflammatory chemistry. So that is the focus of everything that we're doing, is addressing the inflammation, addressing the inflammation's reduction in hormone production in the brain and hormone production throughout the body. You fix the inflammation, the return of hormone production comes in. And sometimes we give them products to help their own body to produce more of the hormone until their body is able to do it on its own. And that can take 6 months to a year, some people 18 months. All depends on, you know, lifestyle, medication that they're on, you know, how well they've been taking care of their body. And that's it.
So because we only have about 9 minutes left, I'll just ask you now that everyone has been listening. You're in California busy with 9,000 patients, but you mentioned you can tell about your clinic. I'm going to give your website again, millenniumhealthstore.com.
No, that's not my website. The website to go to is tbihelpnow.org.
Helpnow.org.
Yeah, that's the key. The other one is a store. Don't want them to go to the store. I want them to read under the science some of the articles that have been published recently on the work that we do, and to understand, I mean, for Georgetown University and Walter Reed, an article, a presentation, and then a subsequent article called Neuroinflammation, the Road to Neuropsychiatric Illnesses. That puts together how inflammation causes change in personality, change in memory, change in all that, and how to reverse it. I don't go into detail because I'm trying not to sell anything other than education and awareness.
Got
it. Just so everybody who's listening to this, that the store is how I'm self-funding, and it's how we pay for our veterans in our program. We have over 1,500 veterans that I know of that we subsidize to put through programs, and we work with 14 501(c) charitable organizations owned and operated, founded by veterans. We help to support them in the best ways that we can, products, laboratories, so forth and so on. So
TBIHelpNow.org is in the program notes, folks. And do you want me to strike the health store? I had both websites.
Yes, get rid of the health store. I don't want people to go to the store.
They
can actually read under the science. They can read about the I was invited by the Marines at Pendleton, the CO and the camp surgeon, to lecture to them. And the next day they send me a group of people, which we put onto a program, which is the Phase 2 protocol, which ended up becoming the Phase 2 protocol. And it's talked about under the science. And you could read the outcome of the people that went into that program. 65% of them were 50 to 100% better in 90 days. Every month they filled out a questionnaire, 18-point questionnaire, talking about psychological, physiological, and physical improvement on the program. 35% of the people did not do at least 50% or greater in the outcome. That was the group that I looked at, the ones who did. And they were the ones on medication, alcohol, and weren't doing the best for their body.
Got it. Okay, that'll be off when we're off the air in 4 minutes. I'll strike that. But TBIHelpNow.org is listed in
the
program notes along with information on Dr. Gordon. How can we... I'm in... But we've got people in all 50 states and 49 countries listening. You did mention you trained some other practitioners. I didn't happen to notice, but enlighten us. Is there a list somewhere?
There's a list under the TBI team. And we're in 50 states and 34 countries. And I'm just adding two more countries. The two countries that are in battle, was invited to start teaching them our technology. So I might be freezing my backside off in late January, in one of the locations.
Great. I hope it's this one.
Challenging. But anyway.
Well, that's it. I want to thank you for all of the great information tonight, and people can look again on the website. And do you still take any patients?
I only work with the military. I only work with the military.
But your daughter?
My daughter, Allison, takes civilian population patients, and through the TBI Help Now website, you can put in a request. Don't put any history or medical stories or anything more than 250 characters, otherwise it'll be dumped. If you send in, want information, what will happen is the Millennium Support Team will send you out information specifically to you, and you do with it as you will. But on the website is all that information. Anybody who actually wants to bypass getting information or rapidly get information, there's a button on there that says enroll. And if you press enroll, you'll still get information. You'll get information on the programs, the phase two protocol, our comprehensive protocol, costs, everything is in there. But most important is educational information so that you can take more control of your healthcare, of your own medical healthcare. And we're always looking for more doctors. We've got 111 clinics. Mine is one. So we have 110 other, and we're in 11 countries. I just came back from Thailand, and now I'm going back to Malaysia and Philippines to open up programs there. We've got Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, Spain, Germany, England, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, United States, Mexico. So we're growing slowly as people realize that traditional approaches are not working. And that's basically it. Okay, Kim?
Okay. Well, we're down to 90 seconds. Dr. Mark Gordon, thank you so much for being on tonight. You're always enlightening, and love to stay in touch. Happy holidays.
We are.
You take care.
And to you, too, and to everybody listening. Be well. Bye.
Thanks. Good night.
You're welcome. Good night.
Okay, everybody. That was Dr. Mark Gordon. Make sure to check out his website, TBIHelpNow.org. TBIHelpNow.org. I'm going to close this out with Daniel Christian and Find My Voice. I will be back next week for all of you animal lovers. with a wonderful show that I don't have time to tell you about. You're just going to have to tune in, and you will enjoy it. And hopefully you got some great takeaways from tonight. Do check out the website. Do watch the film I talked about on Amazon. If you need any of that information, you know where to find me. Good night and God bless everyone. Thanks so much for being here. Good night.
Question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Maybe we all have a role to play. Maybe this is my inauguration day. Maybe finally getting used to my own skin. Never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are.